You're listening to the Prepared Homestead Podcast, equipping you to build a self-sufficient homestead in uncertain times.
We're your hosts, Sean and Monica Mitzel, coming to you from Sovereign Sunrise Permafarm in the mountains of northern Idaho. We're glad you're with us.
On today's podcast, we're going to be talking about four reasons to grow hops. And there's a lot more than that, but we're just going to cover four of them today, probably the four main reasons to grow hops. So that's kind of what we're going to be talking about. And just a quick overview, that's going to be things like shade and forage, all of the medicinal qualities of growing and using hops, and of course, beer and cider making.
Right, the most important. I'm kidding, just kidding. Medicinal is important too.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so before we get into that, if you guys would, do us a favor, huge favor, give us an iTunes review. If you've been listening to this podcast for a little while and if you like it, give us a review on there, help us out on that. That way we can
get more people to hear. Yeah.
Yes, and also if you're on Facebook and if you haven't liked our Facebook page, we're the Prepared Homestead on Facebook.
And share us on your page and tell your friends.
Yes, absolutely. We'd appreciate that very much. Okay, and then now we're going to talk real quick about a homestead update. And for this update, we'll just be very brief here. We've done a couple of processing days for customers, so our farmstead enterprise of processing is going well. And most of the time, we just have people calling us. And
we do, and a lot of people are regulars.
Yes.
Which is nice, because we're getting to know a lot of them personally. And some of them are people who found us on our Facebook page.
Yes, absolutely. Which is kinda neat. It's been cool. And how about you? What's new as far as the things you've been working on?
I think just basically tweaking and working on the medicinal and culinary guild, the herb guild that we have out there. The culinary stuff we planted last year, and it's going crazily insane.
Bananas.
So trying to keep up on all the mint and lemon balm and everything that we planted last year
the comfrey's out of control.
It's huge.
The garlic's
huge.
Out of control.
The bees are loving it, but we need to kind of keep it down a little bit. So we're trimming over there. And then on the other side, the medicinal side, is just kind of seeing how things are growing. I think I'm going to have to replace a couple of the plants that just didn't transplant well. And watching, you know, making sure that the clover isn't overdoing in the portions where
is coming up nicely.
Yeah.
So it's creating that good living mulch, that ground cover.
Yeah.
So that's good. As far as I'm concerned, I try and walk through our food forest at least a couple times a week, seeing kind of what's going on up there. Finding out what's doing well and what's hurting. We've had some mortality with trees, but not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's okay. I mean, we expected that. Definitely getting really to know the real microclimate. So we have a microclimate on our property, and you have a microclimate inside of the food forest. So the areas that are moister and some drier areas and things like that. So that's been really interesting, but that's going well. And then a lot of good production.
Yeah, and then the other thing that we have been doing this year is giving farm tours to some of the people that have found us on Facebook or through our
processing ads, or members of our... We've had members come out here.
Yeah, members come out and visit us and been able to show them around the farm.
Yeah.
And
That's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
All right, so I think that's it for the homestead update.
Mm-hmm.
What about... you can talk about our website real quick.
Yeah. So, our website, we try to keep new information going on the website all the time. And the one thing that we do have that I know we've talked about before is our membership. And we are starting to get more members. And, one of the things it does, first of all, it has really great information. Sean puts out a vlog one to two times a week.
Yeah, on average.
On average, yeah. So this last month, we've been really busy with a lot of other things. So things have kind of slowed down, but they're
picking back up.
Getting back in there. And then we also have all of our courses that we offer for sale, we offer for free to all of our members. And so those are accessible to everyone that joins our membership. The one thing to remember is that joining our membership allows us to continue offering all the stuff we do for free and to keep doing what we're doing, which we love doing, and meeting people and helping out, and especially with the podcast.
Absolutely. Okay, one of the things that we're starting now is we're going to do a plant profile. Each podcast, we're going to do a plant profile, and it's just a quick overview. just to get, help everybody start getting up to speed and learning more plants. Okay, so for today's plant profile, we're going to talk about elderberry. And now, there's lots of different species of elderberry, and we're not going to get down to that level. But we just want to talk about some generalized ideas when it comes to elderberry. Okay, first of all, it's part of the honeysuckle family. It's what we call a woody plant. It has leaves that are opposite. So in other words, the leaves where they meet at the stem come exactly opposite each other, as opposed to something like alternate or many other types of things. Again, there's many different kinds of elderberry, but it is generally speaking, a deciduous shrub. Now, it could be trimmed up into something that looks more like a tree, of course, because that does have a thick woody stem after many years of growth. It could get up to somewhere, I've seen some native elderberry that were pushing like 15 feet tall.
Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty big. Generally speaking, most will be a little bit smaller than that. Again, opposite pinnate type leaves, the flowers are small and white to creamy. A lot of the native elderberry that we see around here up in North Idaho has a yellowish tint to it. So it's like creamy with a slight bit of
like
yellow.
Butter.
Yes. Yes, so that's kind of what we see here, and it produces clusters of juicy, round fruits. Now, again, I don't want to say they're going to be blue or red, because there's many different kinds of elderberry. Many are edible. Some are not. So you have to understand and know what it is that you're...
So don't eat berries on our recommendation.
Yes, no, don't do that. So we have a lot of native elderberry around here, but we also have a lot of planted cultivars on our property.
Which we do know are edible.
Absolutely. No, but I mean, just real quick, blue elderberry is edible, red is not, but those are mainly native species. So as far as ecology, you can find them generally south of about 50 degrees north latitude. Okay, their most preferred sites are moist to mesic type sites. They can be found in valley bottoms, open mountain slopes, and along water courses. That doesn't mean you won't find them on drier sites, because in fact you will see them. Mm-hmm. We see them a lot on even drier sites. So many will do fine there. I think they mean by this is this: they like it the best when it's a little bit moister. Okay, so a couple of interesting facts. A lot of Indian tribes have been using elderberry for a long time. Okay, so if you look at the Okanagan, they harvested these berries in large quantities, fresh and dried. They would harvest them in late autumn, and they would bury them under pine needles and then dig them up in small amounts during winter. And of course, there is a lot of medicinal value to elderberry. In fact, you make as we go into winter, there's always
elderberry syrup.
You always bring it and make elderberry syrup.
Yeah.
And it's kind of our cold medicine.
Yeah, and it's an immune booster. I give it to Hero pretty frequently.
Excellent. Okay, so that covers our plant profile. And we wanted to talk real quick just about...
We're an Amazon affiliate. And one of the things that really helps us, again, keep going and doing everything that we're doing is if you're going to shop on Amazon anyway, go to thepreparedhomestead.org, and in the top right, there's a little banner, and you can click on it, and it'll take you to Amazon from there. The cost is no different for you, and it just gives us a little bit.
Yeah, a tiny amount.
Not a lot.
But all of it helps.
But every penny helps.
That's right.
Yeah. So now we're going to start our main topic, and I'm going to start with talking about shade. Because obviously as we hit summer, shade becomes more important.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a totally legitimate reason to grow hops.
Yeah. Well, one of the great reasons to grow hops in particular for shade is that it grows so quickly.
Yes.
I mean, it puts on, 23 to 26 feet in 2 months.
That's crazy. And now that's generally speaking, that's the growth for the year, right? And it does it all in like 2 months.
2 months. That's it. So it'll start growing in beginning of May or end of April, and it's pretty much done by the beginning of July. And in that time, it grows all of that height plus all of those dense leaves.
Yeah.
And so we have some growing back here on a, over an arch. It has completely covered the arch. Well, it's made it kind of into a little home in there. I don't even...
Oh, yeah.
It's...
But, I mean, it's just amazing, though. I mean,
it's amazing.
It's a little shade pocket, for sure. I mean, it's just... It's incredible.
Well, and the great thing about it is that in the fall, you can either cut it down completely and just rip all those out, or just let it die back. That's what we did that last year. I think this year we'll go ahead and cut it.
Yeah, I finally did get to trimming it.
Yeah, but... And you can just cut it, and so it doesn't add any... weight or anything like that as the winter hits and the snow starts coming and
right.
Everything just kind of dies back after you harvest the hops
right
off of there.
Now one of the things we want to do in the future, because we do have some hops growing on the property, is that we have a need for shade on our back deck. We really do, because we get, you know, our house needs more shade.
We have a lot of windows. If you ever come out to the farm, you'll see what we're talking about. Right. We have a whole side of the house is just windows.
Yeah, we need to get some more shade in there. And we've tried some things with some good success. But I think adding, and we're going to, this is part of our plan, obviously, is to add hops back there. Because by the heat of the summer, it's fully grown and shaded. And that's perfect. And then it dies. By the time fall hits and it's deciduous, so mm-hmm. the leaves fall off, and the sun can poke back through when it starts getting cold.
Right.
So, it makes total sense.
Right, it does. I'm looking forward to getting a pergola in the back, and we can grow some hops up there. It'd be perfect.
Okay, so that was number one. Now, the second reason to grow hops is for forage for animals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now this I think is key, and it's obviously one of the things that we have been trying to do on our property, is to become less reliant on the feed store. And that means growing a lot of our own feed mm-hmm. or forage. So one of the ways we like to do it is by planting plants that can double as forage, that have multiple functions, that obviously these are the things we're talking about right now. And hops are one of those. I mean, the leaves, there's many different parts that can be eaten by our animals. The leaves, the vines even. I mean, our goats tear that stuff up.
Yeah, they love it.
Yeah, and I was doing a little bit of research on this, and there's been a lot of studies done on hops, even the flowers, mm-hmm. the fruit, as far as feeding that, because we fed that to our goats and things too. And chickens and rabbits and all those types of animals do really well on this. Now, I wouldn't, you know, try and create... their entire diet from hops. To me, it's more of a supplement. Okay, and in fact, one of the studies that I read about was dealing with the effects of hops as an alternative to antibiotics in cattle. And it was basically looking at, okay, the impact on their rumen metabolism, the performance, right, their growth and all that, and their health. And the bottom line was the results were favorable. So hops, in other words, you know, what do we do today in our commercial cattle production is we feed low-grade antibiotics, you know, chemical antibiotics just to keep them from getting healthy. And so this is an alternative to that. So, number one, if you're not doing it in a commercial way, you don't need the antibiotics. But if you want a healthier animal, you could add in hops as a way to help their immune systems and everything else, as a kind of a low-grade antibiotic.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, because that's kind of how the medicinal portion was...
Which is number three.
Number three, yeah, was investigated. And it's funny, because it's not one of the oldest herbs that's been used for medicinal purposes. And as a matter of fact, one of the first kind of discoveries of hops and its usefulness was as... And you're going to talk about this in a minute, using it for beer to help decrease bacteria, so an antibacterial, and increase shelf life. And that's why hops was even started in beer anyway. Now, it didn't, because it is very low grade, it doesn't work very effectively as an antibiotic for, you know, fighting bacteria in humans, or even in animals, really. But it was... used a little bit throughout time in different ways. Right now, today, its primary use, and really the one that's been studied the most, and it's definitely come out like, yeah, this works, is as a sleep aid or an anti-anxiety type medicine. One that induces sleep. So if you're having a hard time sleeping, making a...
Instead of taking the sleeping pills, maybe it's an infusion of hops.
Hops infusion. And, you know, you can blend it with some other medicinal herbs to kind of make it even a stronger sleep medicine. So, and I do have, you know, a thing that I make with some hops and lemon balm and mint.
Right.
And it does, I think, help calm and does help me get to sleep easier.
Yeah.
When I make that regularly.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Yeah. But it has been used, you know, as a digestive aid in the past. It's been used for, I don't know, there was a lot of, where did I read this? Sleeplessness, gastritis, anorexia. I mean, people have used it over time for a lot of different things. King George III was given a bed of hops to sleep on to calm him. And it probably worked. I don't know. Probably the smell.
The essential oils and things in it.
Probably. Yeah. So that supposedly helped him fall asleep better. And so his physician would have these pillows filled up with hops and he would sleep on them. So
very
try
cool.
that.
Yeah.
Try sleeping on hops.
Absolutely. Okay, so that was the third reason. Obviously, all the medicinal qualities there, and then the fourth reason is if you're into home brewing.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's beer or even lots of ciders, believe it or not, have hops. And you know, it's interesting because, like you mentioned, hops were starting to introduce for brewing for that antibacterial effect.
Right.
Okay, so they are used primarily as a flavoring and stability agent in beer. Okay, so for that antibacterial effect. So they impart the bitter, the zesty, the citric flavors, all that kind of stuff that hops can do. What's interesting is I think most people just have the idea that, oh, okay, well, hops are you know, all of our IPAs, all of our IPAs with all their high IBUs, their international bitterness units, are hoppy. They have hops in them. Actually, all beers have hops.
Right.
They all use them. They use different cultivars. They boil them for different amounts of time to either increase bitterness or not have so much bitterness.
Right. And then sugar content can make a difference on the hoppiness of the beer.
Absolutely. So there's various purposes for hops in beer making. It's, you know, again, we've already talked about how great it is, how vigorous it is. Its climbing potential, you know, the fact that it's a herbaceous perennial. So the first documented use of hops in beer was in the 9th century. I mean, this has been around for a long time. Before hops, people were using all kinds of different bitter herbs and flowers to have that, to provide that antibacterial effect. Dandelion, burdock root, marigold, ground ivy, things like that. But what we've come to realize over time, obviously, is that hops are very very good at this. So obviously that's become the standard. So we are.
And then you add it has that flavor too. But not only that, it grows so much faster, and you've got tons of hop flowers on those vines out there.
Yes.
Which would be much easier than trying to grow dandelion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And the thing is, your hops, the flower itself looks like a pine cone, looks like a green pine cone, a smaller green pine cone off of a pine tree, you know, a smaller pine cone, not one of the big ones.
Right.
Maybe 2 to 3 inches in length or something like that. So it's really cool, quite cool looking as well.
Well, it is. And when they're ready to harvest, they have a real papery feel to them. They sound kind of crisp,
yes,
and papery.
Yeah, absolutely. So hops, essentially, we're talking about the fruits now, are made up of these acids and oils, and that's really what people are trying to get out when they boil them and they put them into the beer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So besides the water and the cellulose and the various proteins and all that, we come down to the acids, and that's what I want to talk about for just a second. So the acids and the oils, and so what people are doing is they're taking these different acids have different compounds that produce different effects with beer or ciders. So, for example, the alpha acids in hops, and that's probably the most important compound and the most used. And so that gives that bitterness to beer, okay? So especially your IPAs. But again, all beer really has a little bit of bitterness to it.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's what it's doing. It's getting that from hops. And there's things called beta acids. Now, beta acids are considered to have negative factors in brewing. And so what people are doing is they're using cultivars with low beta content, beta acid content. And then there's lots of these essential oils, kind of what you were talking about, inside of hops. And what those essential oils do, and I'm not going to cover all of them right now, but they basically give the aroma, the nice smell. And so you have the citrusy types, aroma, and all these different types of aromas come from different kinds of hops. Okay, so you can't just plant any kind of cultivar of hop and expect to be able to do, you can do different things with them.
Right.
The amount of time that you boil them, for example, has to do with the bitterness, etc. But the essential oils themselves go for the aroma. And then there's flavonoids and things like that. So again, hops they're an integral part of the brewing process. And again, I mentioned the IBUs, and that's the International Bitterness Units. Okay, so that's just an indicator of how bitter the hops. So you'll go to these microbrews and you'll look at the board and you'll see these IPAs and then you'll see IBUs. And then the higher the number, generally speaking, the more bitter. Now, there are some other things that impact that, like you said, the sugars and things like that, what else was put in there. Because you could have a relatively high number and not have a lot of bitterness because more sugar was used, etc. Okay, so again, those alpha acids really provide the bitterness, and the essential oils provide the aroma. So without going into beer making processes and all that, that's generally speaking how people use them. You could look up recipes online and they'll tell you exactly, what kind of hop and how long to boil it, when to add it to your wort, those kinds of things. All right, now, so most of the time, though, if you go to a brew shop, you're going to get pellets.
Yep.
But, that's not a bad way to start and learn before you start. Maybe for the couple of years it takes to get your hops established, you can start with that. You can start by going...
And brewing with pellets is going to be very different than brewing with a fresh dried hop.
Right.
So then it's going to be, you've learned how to do basic beer making, and then maybe you graduate to trying to do it with whole hops, because the weight of these hops is so little and you need a certain amount, of hops in each type of beer. So you might be using a 2-gallon size Ziploc bags of these dried hops compared to a small little bag of pellets.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the flavor is going to be different, and, you're dealing with something that virtually weighs nothing. It's amazing how light they are when they're dehydrated.
Yes. So this year we're hoping to get to do at least some brewing, some home brewing, and start to do some experiments with it. So that's what I'm hoping to get to today or this year. The one last thing is a lot of times you'll hear, you go to these craft beer places and you hear beer snobs talk about... You use terms like grassy, floral, citrusy, spicy, piney, lemony, grapefruit, and earthy. Okay, these are all basically flavors and aromas that come from hops. Okay, so you can say get an earthy type aroma.
Yeah, and my favorite is citrus or grapefruits.
Right, so, and then different types of beers have different hop influences. Okay, so your pale lagers have a low hop influence. But certain types of ales, certainly IPAs and things like that, will have a high level of hop bitterness and usage, et cetera. Okay, so those are the four reasons to grow hops. Every homestead should be growing hops. Even if you're not beer making, you have the shade, you have the forage, and you have all the medicinal value of it.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's the beer and cider making.
Absolutely.
All right.
Okay, so please don't forget, leave a review on iTunes, and any ideas or questions that you have that you'd like us to address on the podcast, you can either leave it on iTunes or send it to Sean at thepreparedhomestead.org.